everybody. Hello. Hello, everybody. Are you out there? Check, 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 check. Hi, I'm Karen Hartglass, and it's time for It's All About Food. One of the reasons why I said, are you out there? It's because I want to know if you're out there. No, I'm on the road again, and we are in Northern California, the Bay Area, in a little hamlet called Monte Sereno right now. My partner Gary and I are fortunate enough to be directing the musical Fiddler on the Roof with a local group in San Jose. And the place where we're staying, it's fabulous. We've been here before. We're in the pool house of Gary's brother's home. But we've had a few power outages, and my phone signal comes and goes, and my Wi-Fi comes and goes. So when I say check 1, 2, it's because I want to know if you're out there, because I don't know if the system is working or not. So, can you hear me, everybody? Do you have any idea what it's like talking when you don't know if anyone can hear you? That's kind of something you get. Most of us, when we talk to people, we look in their eyes and see what their response is to what we're saying. We get some feedback back and forth. For those of us who do radio and podcasts, especially when there isn't another guest, we're really just in a black hole, and we have to imagine what the reaction is, what the response is. It took a while for me to get used to it, but now I'm kind of comfortable with it, stuck with it, and I'm really grateful to the Progressive Radio Network for giving me this opportunity. We are almost in 8 years. It's going to be 8 years of It's All About Food in March. Woo-hoo! I recently posted my best of interview list for 2016 at Responsible Eating and Living. You might check that out. See if you've heard all of the podcasts that were my favorites. And I love them all. Okay, I got to be clear. But it was kind of fun going back through the year and reviewing the ones that were particularly outstanding for a number of reasons. Let me remind you of some of them. I had spoken with Moses Cenarine a few months ago. He has a book out called Meat, Climate Change. And it's a fascinating book full of lots of facts and references. If you want to get to know more about climate change and enhance your language and knowledge of what's going on today, that's a great reference. And we need you to do that, because with the new administration coming into the United States in a few days, we're going to need as many knowledgeable people about what's going on with our home, planet Earth. And another one of my favorites was D. Anthony Evans. If you remember him, he has a program called Train to Live, and he was one of these wonderful people who had lived a very difficult life with lots of misfortune and health issues, and he's turned it all around with a vegan diet, with lots of physical activity, and a very, very positive attitude. I found him very inspiring. And let's see some others. Oh, we'll get back to some others later, because I want to get to current day, 2017. Here we are at It's All About Food, and I'm needing some love, some positive energy. We like to tune in love here at It's All About Food. And I spend a lot of my day reading and researching. And what I research about is not positive. It's bleak. And I find it very, very draining. So it takes focused energy to stay positive. And when I do this show, I like to provide as much positivity as possible because we don't get enough of it. And we all need to be re-energized, rejuvenated, and inspired. And so I have a fabulous person who is going to do that for us right now. She's been on the program a couple years ago. Ellie Lax is the founder of the Gentle Barn Foundation, a national organization that rescues and rehabilitates unwanted animals and heals people with the same stories of abuse and neglect. She is a celebrated animal welfare advocate, humane educator, and the author of My Gentle Barn, Creating a Sanctuary, where animals heal and children learn to hope. So much more about Ellie you can find out at responsibleeatingandliving.com and read her bio or go directly to Gentle Barn. And Ellie, welcome to It's All About Food. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So I'm glad that you're here, and I know you are a very, very busy person. And I'm looking forward to the stories you have to tell. I was just imagining, I mean, I can't imagine what it's like to run the Gentle Barn with so many needy, lovely, non-human animals that need constant care.
Well, yeah, it comes in waves. Sometimes things seem to run really smoothly. We have our staff and we have our volunteers and things go really well. And then other times there are animals that get sick at the same time or old at the same time, and we're running in 50 different directions trying to meet their needs, and those times are tough.
Yeah. Is it raining where you are?
It is. Yes,
yeah, this is a big rainy time for California, and I imagine that makes it especially challenging.
Well, it doesn't make us look pretty, that's for sure. It's very muddy and yucky outside, but the hills are turning green for the first time in years, so we are ecstatic for the rain. And we just make sure that everybody has places to go in the barn to get out of the rain, and they're nice and sheltered, and we keep their bedrooms clean, so it works.
Yeah, it's hard to keep your bedroom clean when there's a lot of mud around.
Yeah, I
know that. Okay, so let's just get a little quick refresher on you and what the Gentle Barn is and what the Gentle Barn does.
Sure. Well, let's see. I think that I came out of the womb obsessed with animals. It's how I was made. So I've always loved animals and being out in nature playing with animals. And when I was little, I would find animals that were lost or injured or hungry, and I realized that they sometimes rely on us for help. So I would bring them home, and by the time I was 7, I decided that my little plan was to have a house full of animals that I saved, and they would be my friends. My parents were not amused, didn't want to. I was full of animals, and they kept saying, when I grew up, I can have as many animals as I wanted. So I took that to the bank, and I now have 200 animals.
Oh! Yes, well, that's one way of doing it when people kind of threaten you in some ways and say, you can't do it now, but you can do it when you grow up. And I guess they assume you'll outgrow your dream, but you didn't. And not only are the 200 so animals that you have grateful, but a lot of other human animals get to experience what's going on and learn so much from them. I remember reading My Gentle Barn, your book, and loving it. Heart-wrenching and wonderful at the same time. So can you talk about how your sanctuary or shelter isn't like others, how it's different, and what you've created there in terms of your animal therapy and mentoring children?
Well, sure. Well, first of all, I spent many, many years rescuing and rehoming dogs and cats, and what I noticed was the young, adoptable, socialized, cute animals got homes pretty quickly. But the older animals with health issues or emotional issues were harder to adopt. And so when I started the Gentle Barn, I was very adamant on wanting to be there for animals that nobody else wanted, not even other rescues. The vets had to put them down. The animal shelters put them down. But I wanted to give those animals a chance. And so at the Gentle Barn, we take in animals that no one else wants. They're either too old, too sick, too lame, or too scared to be adoptable by other agencies. And we bring them in and we rehabilitate them with vet care, but we also have really developed an enormous toolbox of alternative methods such as acupuncture, acupressure, chiropractic, deep tissue massage therapy, ultrasound, massage therapy, water therapy, ice therapy, nutritional supplements, and lots of love. And so we do a whole slew of things that I think other sanctuaries are hopefully starting to embrace to get them mobile, to get them comfortable, to get them healed, both physically and emotionally. And once they're finally healed, if they can find homes of their own, we adopt them. But most of the time, they stay with us, and we give them sanctuary for the rest of their lives. And then when the animals are ready, we invite them to help us heal people with the same stories of abuse and neglect. And so we work with inner-city at-risk and special needs kids. We work with war veterans, senior centers, domestic violence shelters, really anyone out there that is struggling to find themselves, struggling without hope or inspiration, can come here and heal with the animals. With 200 animals, we have an animal that mirrors every single person's story, whether it's feeling hopeless, whether it's feeling lonely, whether it's having multiple homes, whether it's being sent away, abandoned or neglected, or severely, severely abused. There's an animal here that mirrors their story. So they can come in and not only get unconditional love from the animals and not only get inspiration from the animals, that if the animals can recover, they can too, but they can really identify with someone that has their exact story. And so for the first time in many people's lives, they get this idea that they're not alone, that it's not them against the world, that there is someone on the planet that has lived their life and suffered their pain. And it lifts their spirits. They don't feel alone, and they can see the animal learning to trust again, forgive again, live in the moment again, have joy and happiness again, and it inspires them to reach for infinite possibilities. So the Gentle Barn is basically a circle of healing. We heal the animals heal the people, and the people hopefully turn around to be kinder to animals.
That's such a beautiful, wonderful story. I love what you're doing. Who wouldn't? And we have such a society today in need of what you're doing and in need of recognizing, number one, that non-human animals should not be exploited, but how we can benefit from them to heal our own problems. And so many human animals today need a lot of love. And when you don't get it, you're an amazing person, Ellie. That's what I want to say, because you rose above your difficulties and misfortune and had this love that stayed with you, that you were able to share with so many others and expand upon. But it's hard for many people to find that deep within themselves. They've buried it somehow and need it. And it's so much easier to be crabby and grumpy and hateful and spread that around than it is to be loving and caring and nurturing. And I love that there's a way back for people.
Yeah, thank you. And I completely agree with what you just said. When we go through tough times, and listen, honestly, when I went through my childhood, I thought, oh, I'm the only one. The truth is that we all have our stories. We all have our childhoods. We all have our struggles. We all have things that we have to overcome, each and every single one of us. And every single one of us has the choice to make to let the pain and what we've gone through cripple us and turn us hateful and resentful, just like you said, or take the pain and turn it into a gift that we can share with the world. And I made that choice, and I was lucky enough to be able to make the choice to be able to heal and love the world through my pain instead of hate it and resent it. And I think our animals make that choice every single day. There's a point in our animals' life where they go through their recovery, they learn that we're not going to hurt them, they start accepting their safety and their love here, and then they make a choice, instead of being resentful and angry and harmful for the rest of their lives, they make a choice to take what they've gone through and pay it forward and inspire someone else and love someone else and heal someone else. And watching the animals do that time and time again is so incredibly inspiring. And then the people can come and get healed by the animals, and then they can make that same choice as well. And I think we're all one. We're all connected. It's not animals versus people. It's not some people versus others. I think we're all spiritual beings. We're all connected. We are all one. And if we can learn to love each other and heal each other, then that circle of healing can keep going to make a better planet. And that's what we're trying to do here.
Beautifully, beautifully said. I had a listener recently who was commenting on me talking about spirituality and bemoaning the fact that many people that consider themselves spiritual do not recognize what's going on in our non-human animal companions that we share this planet with, but there is so much going on in each and every one of them, and we can learn from all of them.
Agreed.
Let's talk about the new Gentle Barn in Tennessee. What's going on there, and how did that happen?
Well, the Gentle Barn was my dream since I was little, but really the big plan is to have a Gentle Barn in every state so that everyone can hug cows and cuddle turkeys and give pigs tummy rubs and look in their eyes and know for certain that we're all the same. And maybe then we can cultivate a future generation of people who will have reverence for Mother Earth and kindness for animals and compassion for other people. And maybe then we can have peace on this planet. And so for many years, we just weren't ready financially, structurally, and we were always building to the day where we would be organized enough with an incredible board of directors and just well-known enough to be able to go national. And so 2 years ago, almost exactly, yeah, because my birthday's coming up now. And 2 years ago exactly, my birthday was coming up, and I told my husband that I wanted to rescue a cow for my birthday. So we thought we would go somewhere local to California and find maybe some baby veal calves and bring them home and heal them. And I got really, really excited. But a little bit later, we got a phone call from a woman in Tennessee that said that there was a cow there that was missing a foot, and nobody was able to help him. And there was something very special about this particular boy, and she knew it was crazy because we were all the way in California, but is there something that we could do? And so my husband, Jay, reached around to see if there was any bovine surgeons in the area and found the UT Knoxville Large Animal Hospital, who is amazing with surgeries. And then he found several companies willing to make a prosthetic foot for a cow. And
wow.
So he called me and said, happy birthday, we're going to Tennessee. So two years ago, we went to Tennessee to rescue Dudley and get him multiple necessary surgeries at the hospital and fit him for a prosthetic. And it took about 5 months. And when he was ready to leave the hospital, we toyed with the idea of bringing him to California, but it was a very long trip. And also, I don't know, we just really wanted to keep him in Tennessee. We thought it would be better for him. And so we went to our board of directors and said, come on, guys, are we ready to go national? And they said, you know what, we are. Go for it. And so that is what enabled us to build the second Gentle Barn in Knoxville, Tennessee, as home for Dudley and all his future friends. And now there's Dudley the cow, there's Horton, Henry, and Lily the pigs, there's Worthy, Indy, Chris, and Daisy the horses, there's Peyton Manning and Luke Skywalker and Heather the turkeys. There's Rick Springfield and Jesse's girl, the chickens, and there's so many more animals there that were saved in Tennessee because of all of this.
Well, happy birthday to you upcoming, and careful what you wish for, Ella. You make your dreams come true. That's beautiful. Yes, let's have a Gentle Barn in every state and then in every city, and maybe we can heal the world.
Yeah.
Now let's talk about the Year of the Chicken. You know, it's a funny thing, these names we have. We have food days every day, and they're pretty much there to support commercial food products, I think, and then we have years of different animals. And do we really care about the animals that are celebrated during that year? And now it's the year of the chicken or rooster, I read. But tell me about some touching stories you have.
Yeah, so I love that 2017 is the year of the rooster. I'm very excited about that. I think that when people are evolving and maybe leaning towards a more compassionate diet and thinking about a plant-based diet, I think over and over I hear this, that the very last things that they give up are chicken. And I have had the most incredible experiences with chicken, and I want to shout it from the rooftops. I really want people to know how amazing these creatures are. Because at first glance, they look little and not intelligent and maybe dirty. And so it's very easy for people to kind of be removed emotionally from chickens. But really, I've had the most incredible experiences. I had one of my very first roosters. His name was Charlie. And he was a very flashy little guy. He was little, but he was orange and red and green. And he had beautiful, dazzling feathers and colors. And I had always been raised that chickens weren't that smart. And so I knew I was going to love them, but I didn't have high hopes for their intelligence. Well, this little guy liked to roost on the ground at night instead of roosting in the barn on the tops of the eaves with all the others. And I was nervous because chickens are blind at night, so when it goes dark, they can't see. And so laying on the ground like that, he was susceptible to raccoons or whatever kind of predators might get into the barnyard. And so every evening, just before dark, I would go and find Charlie, and I would bring him into a coop where he would be safe and sound through the night. Well, on one particular evening, it was a very trying, long day. A lot had happened. I was exhausted, and I had people with me that I was honestly trying to just, I just wanted them to laugh. And so kind of dreading the trek all across the barnyard to find Charlie, I kind of was joking to make them giggle, and I was like, Charlie, come on, time for bed. And I absolutely did not expect him to come running. But much to my surprise, as I said that, Charlie, come on, time for bed, he lifted up his head, got up, and he started running to me as fast as he could. And he ran all the way to me going, yep, I'm ready for bed. And it blew me away, like the stereotype for chickens that they're not so smart. And I believed it so much that I would have never in earnest thought to call him to bed. But because I was joking, I did it, and he came to me running. And from that day on, every single night when I put the animals to bed, I would stay where I was, I would call, Charlie would come running, I would kiss him and hug him and cuddle him and then put him to bed. And that was the day that I realized how intelligent chickens are, and just because they're small and covered in feathers doesn't mean that they can't know their names, that they don't have the same intelligence and affection as dogs. And I started looking closer, and through the years, I've had the most wonderful relationships with chickens. I had another chicken named Strawberry, and Strawberry loved being held. And so when she wanted to be held, she would just hurl herself at me. So I would be walking around the barnyard doing my chores, cleaning the barnyard, filling up water buckets and such. And from the corner of my eye, I would see this little yellow chicken come flying at me, and I would drop whatever rakes I had in my hand, and I would catch her. And most days, I would have to do my chores one-handed because the other hand was holding a sleeping chicken Strawberry in my arms.
I love these stories. Oh, yeah, my goodness.
And then recently, we rescued a one-day-old chick that had a deformed foot. And so we brought her to our avian specialist who fixed her. And then a week later, she came back to us. But she was way too young and little to be in our barnyard unattended. And whoever brought her to us to rescue didn't bring her mother. So I invited her into my house to live with us until she was big enough for the barnyard. And I will tell you, that just sealed the deal for me. I mean, there was absolutely nothing different about that chicken named Jasmine than any of my dogs. I would call them to eat, and the dogs and the chicken would come running, and they would eat. I would sit on the couch, and she would jump in my lap and fall asleep while I watched TV. She sat on my shoulder while I drove in the car, and I had this bedtime ritual with her where I would have to hold her and pet her and sing a certain amount of songs before she would fall asleep. And I will tell you that when there were days when I tried to cheat the bedtime ritual and do it faster, she would not go to sleep. I had to do the entire ritual before she was willing to go to sleep.
Oh, my gosh. My heart is so full right now. If only people could realize what we have on this planet, all this richness, all this potential love and beauty. Who doesn't like to be tucked in at night and be sung to and cuddled? We all need that.
Yeah.
Human and non-human animals.
And you know, Howard Lyman said it best. Howard Lyman said, there is no difference between the species. The only difference is our perception of them. If we see someone as dumb, as dirty, as worthless, then that's what they're going to be. But when we look deeper and we open our hearts and we open our minds and we see their affection and their intelligence and their love of family and how they have best friends just like we do and how they have sadness just like we do and how they express joy just like we do, then we'll see a whole being that is deserving of the same rights and freedoms just like we are. And really, you know, to look on the surface and go, oh, well, that has feathers, so that's not smart, or that has fur, that's not deserving of the same rights as we do. I mean, come on, really, are we really that shallow? Let's look deeper into each other's eyes and into each other's hearts, because there's a whole world of love and magic waiting there for us.
And I must say that it's obvious to me, but not obvious to everyone, that the same thing applies to humans. We're not just talking about non-human animals here. This is humans as well. People, it doesn't matter if they're short, tall, thin, wide, black, blue, orange, pink, freckled, smooth, whatever it is. We all breathe the same air. We all drink the same water. We all want the same things. And we need this perception thing. I'm going to steal that a little bit and play on that a little bit more later on, because it's all about perception.
Yeah.
So thank you for that. Okay, so we just have a few more minutes. I wanted to talk about concern for peace. You recently blogged about that, and what is it, and what do you plan to do for 2017?
Well, I just have this theory that the increase in the amount of animals that suffer is correlated with the amount of violence that we have in our neighborhoods. I think that there's just so much violence and so much suffering and bullying and pain that people and animals are going through. And the more we're removed from each other, the more we cover Mother Earth in concrete, the more we enslave and encage animals, the more we hurt and beat on each other, the worse it gets. But the good news to that is that the minute we open the cages, the minute we look deeper, the minute we have compassion for someone that might not look like us or act like us, but we know deep inside we're the same, we can turn it around quite quickly, where we can celebrate love and peace among all of us. And so in 2017, we really just want to heighten our dedication to that and make those connections, people to people, people to animals, animals to animals, make those connections that we're all one, we're all the same, we're all love. And if we can make those connections and cultivate future generations to love more deeply, to see the similarities that we all share instead of our differences, that we can really turn this thing around and strive for more peace in our communities.
So I say this so often, I always have to give my disclaimers and clarifications. Can't do enough of that in these times. I am not a religious person, but I take what's useful to me from lots of philosophies and belief systems. And you mentioned in your blog one of my favorite metaphors or phrases, which is that the lion shall lay with the lamb.
I
so want that to happen. I remember in the film Finding Nemo, which is such a wonderful film and has lots of hidden and not so hidden messages about how fish are our friends, not food. But
yes.
I love the sharks that were in this kind of like a 12-step program or whatever they were talking about. They were trying to be vegetarian. And it was a similar thing. The lion shall lay down with the lamb. The sharks won't be carnivorous. I think there is something like that for us on this planet. But we all need to move in that direction together to get there.
Agreed. And it starts with every single one of us. And, you know, I have a very personal example. It's really easy for me to talk, oh, we should love each other, we should see our similarities. You know, it's very easy to just talk about that. But in implementation, you know, when we rescued Dudley, he was rescued from a rancher who was third-generation rancher. I mean, that's what his family did, was bring in baby cows, feed them, fatten them up, and then send them back to slaughter to make money. And that's who he was. It's what he had done. Again, he was third-generation. And it would have been so easy for me to judge him and maybe not be so warm to him and think that I knew who he was. But I really try to put into practice this idea that we have to focus on our similarities with compassion instead of looking at our differences. And so I really overcame that drive to want to judge him. And I opened my heart to him, and I heard about his childhood and what made him the man that he was today. And we were warm and loving to him. We never judged him. We thanked him profusely for allowing us to rescue Dudley. And I think that warmth and love and compassion that we extended to him paid off, because by the time we were done, he retired from ranching. He quit, basically, and he went vegetarian, and he changed his life. And I don't think we would have done that if we had judged him and if we were cold to him and if we came at him like that. But because we extended love to him with what we had in common instead of what was different between us, and we loved him just like I would love anyone, he responded to that.
This is so beautiful, and it's important and probably one of the most difficult things we can do. Be non-reactive and non-judgmental. It's really challenging. I know a couple years ago I was asked to speak about animal agriculture's impact on climate change to 250 cattle producers on the night before a bull sale. And first of all, I didn't want them to kill me. But I wanted them to hear what I had to say. And so I started, just as you said, talking about the similarities that we all have, the dreams that we all have, the wants that we all have, because we have more similarities than we have disagreements and dislikes. And we need to align on those things if we're going to move forward.
Agreed.
That's very good. It's nice. I like talking to you. I like everything that you've done. I had you on today for a selfish reason. I needed to hear you speak and hear about all the wonderful things you're doing just to inspire myself for 2017. This is going to be a very challenging year for many of us, and we have to stick with this concept of being non-reactive, non-judgmental. That doesn't mean we don't do the work. The work is so important, but the way we do it really matters.
Yeah, I mean, Martin Luther King said an amazing quote. He said, "You can't rid the darkness with more darkness. You can only end darkness with more light." And so if we're running around hateful and angry and sour and judging and being angry all the time, that's darkness. That's not doing anything. But if we can open our hearts and love more and have more compassion for everyone, not just the people that are doing things we believe in, but everyone, the people that work at the slaughterhouses, the people that are doing horrible things to animals, the people that are eating meat, we can approach them with love and compassion and pour more light into every conversation and more light into the world. That is what's going to change things around. And it will. And one of the things that I practice, by the way, which has really helped me, because obviously running the Gentle Barn for 18 years, we have seen some really horrendous things. We have seen some very dark, very ugly, very cruel things. And so people ask me all the time, how in the world do I not go crazy and how do I stay composed? And one of the most powerful things that I do to infuse more light into my day and into my life is every morning before I leave my bedroom, I spend at least 5 minutes visualizing the world that I want to create. I close my eyes. Sometimes I play soft music. Sometimes I don't. It doesn't really matter. And I set my timer for 4 or 5 minutes, and I visualize soft, fertile earth beneath my feet. And I visualize rich, thick, tall forests. And I visualize the sky filled with birds that are safe up there. And I visualize thundering hooves of horses running by because they are wild herds again. And I visualize huge, big, abundant gardens feeding the world. And I visualize people holding chickens and kissing them and hugging cows and holding hands. And I visualize clean, pristine waters that lead to oceans with thriving marine life. And I visualize clean air. And I visualize that peace and that love and that freedom for all creatures. And I live there every single day for 5 minutes before I start my day. Yes, we have to be cognizant of the truth. Yes, that we have to be aware of the madness that is happening around us. But most importantly, we have to live in the world that we want to create, and we have to know with every fiber of our being that it's possible. And then, from that possibility, then we start our day, and then we have conversations, and then we do our work from within that belief and that hope that that world is waiting for us and that we will create it.
Thank you. Thank you, Ellie Lax, for that so very much. I'm looking forward to archiving this interview and listening to everything you just said, either on the recording, audio recording, or in the transcription when we get it. That is a beautiful, positive affirmation, imagery. It's meditation, of course, and we all need to do it. Did you all feel and see and hear and smell and taste everything that she was describing? Thank you for that. I'm going to take that with me everywhere. So important. And you know, your dreams come true, Ellie. That dream, I want that dream to come true too for everyone.
I think it will.
Yeah. Thank you so much for joining me. Thank you for everything you're doing. I'm so in awe and inspired. And what else can I say? Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay. Bye-bye. That was Ellie Lax from The Gentle Barn. And I recommend not only visiting the Gentle Barn website and or the Gentle Barn sanctuaries, now one in Tennessee and one in California. Their website is www.gentlebarn.org. Oh, I'm kind of a little choked up imagining that imagery that she offered us just now. The book is great, The Gentle Barn, and you will have, if you don't have profound appreciation right now for what this person has done, you will have even more so when you read where she came from and the challenges she faced. So I feel really honored right now to have been able to have that conversation, and I want to take in all of that because I so needed it. And how about you? Did you need that? I'd love to know what you thought about the conversation just now. Send me your comments anytime at info@realmeals.org. And remember that we cannot make change with the darkness that's all around us from the dark. We need to find the light. Find the light within us. It's there. It's burning. You need to feed it, breathe into it, imagine it, and share it. This concept of perception. I hadn't quite heard of perception in the context that Ellie mentioned it, but I want to expand on that now that she's put that into my mind. Perception is such a powerful thing. When I'm talking to people who are in a health crisis and sharing my healing experience with cancer, I often mention Dr. Bruce Lipton and his audio program, The Wisdom of the Cells. And a lot of the things that he talks about have to do with what our cells perceive. Our 50 to 100 trillion cells in our bodies, our cells perceive the environment that is presented to them, the environment they perceive, not necessarily the real environment. And what that means for a health perspective is that if we are giving our body messages that aren't healthy, images and comments all the time, our cells will respond to us and respond accordingly, making us ill. And if we encourage ourselves to be strong, to be the best they are, to be cheerleaders for our own cells within our bodies, we can see powerful positive effects on our own personal health. And I know it worked with me. That's why meditation is so important on so many levels. It can make us healthier. It can make us conquer fear if we are afraid of a health crisis or even the world around us, which can be extremely scary. And this idea of perception, so I'm expanding it now. I focus on a lot that has to do with our bodily cells, but if we expand on how we perceive everything, if we take that imagery that Ellie gave us and focus on that, I want to think that our exterior environment can become what we perceive it to be. Some people might say this is really simple-minded thinking. I don't. I think it's powerful. And at the very, very minimum, it feels good. And that's what life is about. Living through each moment in time. You know, last week I talked about there is no time because our living moment is our, I'm getting a little tongue-tied here, our life consists of moments. Right now, there's only right now. There isn't the past, there isn't the present. Oh, I'm really getting a little nutty here. There isn't any past, there isn't any future, there is only present. And focusing on that moment, finding ways to feel good in the moment, is the way to enjoy life. And focusing on imagery of how we want the world to be rather than bringing ourselves down all the time how the world currently is, I think will really help. Now, this needs to be coupled with action. And we all need to be doing things to help make the world a better place. And not just thinking about it, but doing. But sometimes visualizing first helps us with what needs to be done and what we personally can do. Okay. You know, part of that with my nonprofit, Responsible Eating and Living, and primarily what we focus on here on this program, I like to stick with the positive. I like to stick with joy. Occasionally we talk about some dark things, but I like to think that when we do, we wrap it around lots of light and positivity. I don't like to focus on the horrible things that we're doing on this planet. They are infinite. Let's focus on all the great things that we can do. And Ellie is a prime example of that. Now let's talk about some more good news. I made a whole list of things I want to talk about, and it's funny because I never get to everything. So here's some good news. I want to put this together in the right order here. So we're talking about plant based foods. And what's in a name? We've talked a number of times on this program about how I think the 21st century is going to be about taking products that are made in part from animal ingredients and making them with plant ingredients. This is a trend. There's investment behind it, and it's a wonderful thing. And we saw a lot of passion going on with mayonnaise last year, where Hampton Creek Foods was doing very well at getting their Just Mayo plant-based mayonnaise products on the shelves. There were other vegan mayonnaises out there, but Hampton Creek was making the big splash. And Unilever, the company that makes Hellmann's and Best Food Mayonnaise, got nervous. They slapped the lawsuit on Hampton Creek. And in the end, they realized what they were doing was ridiculous, trying to capitalize on the name mayonnaise, saying that mayonnaise is only mayonnaise if it has eggs in it. And they ended up making their own plant-based mayonnaise. If you can't beat them, join them. So we're seeing a lot of that with other products. There hasn't been a lot of buzz about milk until recently, but there are some folks that are trying to hold on to the word milk and have it only mean milk from a dairy cow. Did you read the letter that one senator from Vermont presented and is creating a campaign to get the FDA to look at not allowing manufacturers of plant-based milks to call them milk? And it's kind of ridiculous. And the argument behind it is that the consumer is going to be fooled. The consumer is going to be confused. And we're actually, I like to think, and I really believe that we all are a lot more informed than some of these people want to think. For the most part, I absolutely do not believe that people that are buying almond milk, soy milk, oat milk, hemp milk, coconut milk, even milk of magnesia, I think they know they're not getting cow's milk, and they're buying it on purpose. And we should see this change, and hopefully for the better, although the new administration that's coming in may change everything for a while. That's why we need to be vigilant. But on the subject of plant-based products coming in and being accepted and being profitable, which is important in a capitalistic society, we have Miyoko's Vegan Butter. Have you tried it? Miyoko's Kitchen makes a European-style cultured vegan butter, and I've tried it. And I have to say that it was surprisingly good, where it had this like a lingering flavor that reminded me of butter, cow's butter. Now, it did that without the sickening flavor that I remember about butter and milk. And it's a really good product, and it works really well. And Trader Joe's is now offering this palm oil-free vegan product at 226 stores nationwide. And this is something to celebrate. I personally don't eat a lot of butter. I eat it as a treat from time to time. But to get people to move along the food continuum, as I like to say, and move toward plant-based products, this is a beautiful thing. And I'm sure we'll have some Congress people saying, oh no, you can't call this butter because it's not made from cow. But we're changing that, and that's exciting. Can I tell you what else is exciting to me? Have I talked about Corn Thins before? If you read my blog, What Vegans Eat, at responsibilityandliving.com, occasionally I sing praises about corn thins, and we're here in California. We did our first shopping here when we got here, and we don't have a big space in this pool house we're staying in, limited refrigeration. We have to be careful about what we get. At the same time, we have to make sure we have foods that we like and are good for us. And we wanted to have corn thins because, as I like to call them, they are a great vehicle for schmears. We like them with peanut butter. We like them with the almond butter that we make, and hummus and avocado. And it's quick and easy, and sometimes very, very helpful. So we found them at Whole Foods. Thank you, Whole Foods. They're organic. I think they come from Australia, from a company called Real. And these are real corn things. So I have a little personal relationship, like I relate to them calling their food Real. But I went to grab them, and they have several different kinds. And my partner, Gary, was surprised when I said, no, we don't want the original. We want the corn thins with sesame seeds. The original corn thins have oil in them. And I really don't think that's a necessary thing to have oil in your corn thins. So we get the corn thins with sesame, has a tiny little bit of salt, and that's all they're made of, and they're really fabulous. So I was really grateful for that. But then it made me think about the importance of label reading, and there's a lot of things going on right now regarding label reading, and it's actually a little entertaining, I think. Just last week, you may have seen it, the FDA came out with the new nutrition labeling guidelines. And what's really fun to look at is their PDF Q&A on the nutrition and supplement facts labels related to the compliance date, added sugar, declaration of quantitative amounts of vitamins and minerals, guidance for the industry. You read this, I mean, it's amazing how complicated it is for food manufacturers to determine the nutritional value of their foods and what they have to report, what they can report, what they can't report, what they can kind of get away with. And what it says to me, frankly, is I want to eat whole foods that don't require these crazy labelings. There is so much description here about what can be called added sugar and not added sugar. It's a fascinating read. There are a number of things that are happening, and for one of them, for example, is amending the definition of a single serving container. And I'm going to be curious how that pans out, because you may know that manufacturers have used the serving size to dupe us in some ways, because if they make the serving size small enough, then they don't have to report things like hydrogenated oils, a number of things. It makes the number of calories look very low, the amount of sodium, when the serving size is very small, but it's not a realistic serving size. So my understanding is the serving size will be a little more realistic, and it should be fun. Should be fun to read new nutrition labels. The thing is, they won't be coming out until 2018 and 2019. And that's, of course, if the new administration doesn't repeal the whole thing, right? Another FDA labeling thing that came out a month ago, December 2015, in New York, for chain restaurants, we require that every item on the menu of chain restaurants lists calories. And the FDA is going to try and make this happen around the country. And we'll see if it happens soon. And I have mixed feelings about it. For example, we like to eat at Le Pain Quotidien, the daily bread. It's a Brussels restaurant. It originated in Belgium, Brussels, I think. And we have many of them in New York City. And when I'm reading a menu of what I think are healthy items and I see the calories, I'm always like, whoa. Because I don't think about calories when I'm eating. Sometimes I think, well, maybe I want to buy more calories for my dollar than less calories. Because if I'm getting lentils and onions and all these foods that are good for me, maybe I want to have a few more than a few less. But I think mostly this is a good thing for people to see in fast food chains with food that isn't particularly healthy, to see that how many calories are in their muffin or whatever else it is that they choose to eat, and they will be surprised which how much salt, sugar, and fat is in so many of these foods. My recommendation, of course, is eat a whole foods plant-based diet. Keep it simple. Keep it minimal. Find your kitchen. Make wonderful foods there where you know what's in everything, and you'll be so thankful for that. And your body will thank you too. And your cells will perceive only good things. And that's what I wish for you. Thanks for listening today to It's All About Food. I'm Karen Hartglass, and you can find me at responsibleeatingandliving.com. Love to hear from you at info@realmeals.org. And have a delicious week. Thank you.